Are the Orioles for real? Are they not? Connor Newcomb of Locked On Orioles is stopping by for his thoughts. And by the way, the Cardinals figured out they should probably win the first game of a series.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I am your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me. Where's my lower third? It is right there. You can call me Sully. I am an Emmy-nominated television producer who has been a baseball podcaster for the last decade or so, and I'm now in my fifth season as a host here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day. Hey, follow us on YouTube. Follow us on Instagram. Follow Locked On MLB Pods. Same handle for Twitter. I am your pal, Simon Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And if you are listening to the show every day, I know some of you drop in and out and everything like that, but if you're someone who's here every single day, guess what? You should put in, whether it's on the YouTube, whether it's on Instagram, whether it's on Twitter, put a hashtag right there called Everyday Sully. I want to know who are everyday listeners. It was originally Everyday MLB, but apparently that was already a tag. So Everyday Sully, there you go. I'd like to know who some of you are. We'll read some of you. If you have questions and things like that, we're going to read them on the air right now. Hey, teasing a little bit, Connor Newcomb of Locked On Orioles stop by because I want to talk to him a little bit about Baltimore's start and some other thoughts. But by the way, I've been picking on the Cardinals. We got here. This is episode's being dropped on the 9th of May. It took all the way till May 8th. I thought for a minute that St. Louis was going to lose yet another first game of the series. And, you know, there was a couple of points where the Cubs did tie the game at one point, and they kept putting runners on base. Contreras came back to Wrigley, got a big double, and you know what? And Stroman pitched well for Chicago, but the Cardinals did win. So there you go. They didn't gain any ground on Pittsburgh, who got a Mitch Keller complete game shutout. Remember those? So the Pirates sort of dust themselves off against Colorado and sort of, you know, kept their distance, and they didn't lose ground to the Cardinals, who finally won the game, and to the Brewers, who put up a 7 spot on the Dodgers. But, hey, good for the Cardinals. Maybe they can actually, I don't know, win a series, get off the mat a little bit. You know, there's still a long way to go in this season, of course, but, you know, there were some fundamental problems with this Cardinal team that just, oh, boy, just made me feel a little woozy. Now, the Angels wound up winning a 6-4 game against the Astros, which means they're starting to hold their own at the top of the American League West. Oddly, the Astros are a game under 500. Again, a hell of a long time to go before the end of the season. But still, interesting that the Astros are not off to that great start. And the Angels have dusted themselves off. They did not gain any ground on the Rangers. Boy, it's so cruel. Logan Gilbert, pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, was throwing a game against the Rangers, had a perfect game going into the seventh inning. Marcus Semien breaks it up, and then 2 runs come in to score. So Gilbert retired every batter from inning 1 through 6, and what did he get for his troubles? A loss. I hate the win-loss stat. Hate it. The Giants wound up losing to the Nats. The D-backs with the Dodgers loss, and the Diamondbacks wound up beating the Miami Marlins, which means the Diamondbacks, who have won 7 of their last 10 games, are still not fading quite yet. You know, the Pirates losing streak is over, and they're still on top of the division. Man, some of these surprise teams, they're, you know, we'll talk about this when we talk about the Orioles, where the surprise team goes from a, hey, that's a nice start, to maybe we're contenders, when the calendar flips over to June. So we're not quite at that point with some of these teams, but hey, you know, stick around. I watched a little bit of the A's-Yankees game, and the A's wound up tying a game. It was tied in the bottom of the sixth, and then the Yankees put up five unanswered runs. It's really rough watching this A's team. It is a minor league team. They're dying on the vine. There may be troubles with the site in Las Vegas. Maybe they should have spent some money on the team and maybe doing some, I don't know, upkeep on the stadium instead of pining for Las Vegas. But that's a different podcast, one that I've captured a lot. Hey, there was a lot of big innings. The Royals put up an eighth spot in the sixth inning to go up in the White Sox. You know, the White Sox look like they may have been having a little momentum on their side, but having the Royals put an eighth spot on them isn't really the way to inspire a heck of a lot of confidence in the club. The other game was the Rays. McClanahan got another solid start. You know, I don't like to look at win-loss records because I think that those can be misleading. It is a little eye-opening when you see his record is 7-0. Could mean anything, but his ERA is 1.76, and six shutout innings sure goes a long way in making that happen for the Rays. Wander Franco got a couple of hits on there. Home run by, was it Low or Lau? One of the two. Come on, let's have some consensus on our names. And Gibson, who pitched for Baltimore tonight, did well. I mean, six innings, two runs. But Baltimore wound up losing the game. And, they had a very easy first part of their schedule. And now they're getting to the parts where they were playing the Braves and the Rays. They've been holding their own in each of the games, which is a good sign. It'd be nice for them if they won a couple of the games that they're, hanging tight with them. But once again, the Orioles are off to a really good start. Connor Newcomb is the host of Locked On Orioles, and he's going to stop by. And we're going to talk about that start and what it means for the American League East. But first, let's talk a little bit about FanDuel. Now, let me tell you something. This is the best time. My personal favorite time in sports is baseball playoffs. But if you just want a great sports smorgasbord, say that three times fast, in front of you, you got the NHL playoffs. Then you have the bubble teams, like the Heat and the Lakers, are making some big strides in the NBA playoffs. I bet if you put money down on the Heat and the Lakers to make a run for the conference finals, you would have made a nice, pretty penny. And guess what? Where you should have gone to those bets is FanDuel. And right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. And you probably would have been betting on whomever the Lakers or the Heat are playing next. You got great promotions every day on FanDuel's safe and secure app. Don't worry about your money there. That's going to go to the wrong people, and you get paid instantly. And there's no better place to bet on all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Visit FanDuel.com/lockdown. Get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's FanDuel.com/lockdown. FanDuel, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. Well, as promised, we have with us once again, for the first time this season, we're having Connor Newcomb of Locked On Orioles as our guest. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing well. I know we're going to talk about this, but I am podcasting about a baseball team that has expectations in early May, which it's been 6 years, I think, for this team for that. So that's been nice.
Yeah. I think it's been a while. I think Obama was president.
Yeah.
The last time. But let's get down to a couple brass tacks things here. The Orioles did have a surprising year last year. They got their nose above 500. And I'm going to bring up the Kansas City Royals a few times here, because I remember in 2013, after being irrelevant for like two decades, the Royals put together a winning season, and you started to see some of the pieces: Moustakas, Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, Perez. They made the deal that was controversial at the time, of swapping, of bringing in Shields for Will Myers, also brought in Wade Davis. But you saw, like, oh, look at that. They had a winning year. They were competitive. They didn't win it that year, but you got the sense of, okay, this is a team that's finally, after all these rebuilds, are finally starting to make the Rubik's Cube come together. I got that. I kind of felt that the same way with last year's Orioles team, that all the years, oh, we got this player coming up, that player coming up, and finally you saw, you know, the Mountcastles, the Richmonds, the Santanders, all the players are they put together a decent year. So that brings in for this year, is this team going to be the 2014 Royals, who went on to go to the World Series, got to within one swing of winning the World Series, actually, and won it the next year? Or are they going to be the 2021 Royals, which I bet you forgot at this point in the season were in first place, and then after that fell off of a cliff? This is a strange time for the Orioles, where they'll be tempted by the dark side. And they've been playing tomato cans up until recently, and they had a competitive series against the Braves, but they lost those two heartbreaking walk-off games, and now they're playing the Rays. What is your take on what this Orioles team is right now? Are they a team that beat up a lot of bad teams and are going to face the music, or are they a team, a scrappy team that's going to show their mettle?
Yeah, I would say I don't think they are 2014 Royals yet. I do not see the Orioles having the tying run at third base in the ninth inning of Game 7 of the World Series. Like, I don't think I see the Orioles being that close to a championship. However, I like the comparison because they seem to be playing a little above their heads, which I think the Royals did as well that year. Mm-hmm. They just kind of sustained it by continuing to add to the team and get better. But I will say, you know, you're definitely right about the schedule. So before this series against the Braves, when the Orioles lost 2 of 3 in Atlanta, which I don't think is a terrible thing. Like, the Braves might be the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
You have a chance to win all three games, you win one of them.
Yeah.
Before that series, they played 22 straight games against teams that were below 500 when they played them. The best team in that stretch was the Red Sox, and I think the Red Sox were right under 500 when they played them.
Yeah, they were.
And they went 17-5 in those 22 games. So you still got to beat the bad teams, right? It's still impressive to do so at that high a rate. I mean, 17-5 is a great stretch against any teams. But you got to remember, there's a lot of good teams, especially in the AL East, and they didn't play the Yankees, the Rays, or the Blue Jays in that stretch. They played the Tigers twice. They played the A's. They played the Royals. It doesn't get a lot easier than that. So now,
yeah, but you made the point. You still have to win those games.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, that the key to any team putting together a winning team record is to say, hold your own with the best teams and beat the snot out of the bad teams. And so far, we know they've done the second part of that.
Yeah, and they seem to hold their own with the Braves over the weekend. I mean, they clobbered Max Fried. It was his worst start in like a couple years on Friday night. And then they honestly, I mean, you know, they gave up runs in the eighth on Saturday and lost, and they got walked off in the 12th on Sunday. They had the lead in the eighth inning, though. In Saturday's game, they got a couple of runs off of Spencer Strider, which is honestly tough for a lot of people to do. They had a good plan against him. They got him out of there in five innings. Like, they seem to be ready for these teams, ready to face these teams. And the Rays are another good test. I mean, you could argue after playing the worst teams in baseball, they've got the best two teams in the league back to back. So it's definitely a fun stretch. But I will say, if you grade a team on, if you can beat up on the bad teams and you can hold your own with the good teams, that's what they're doing. I would say they held their own with the Braves. And it's going to be really interesting to see, though, because although a Braves series is nice, it's going to be really important against the Rays, against the Yankees, against the Blue Jays, and against the Red Sox further down the line. I know they've already played two series against them, but they're looking much better now than they did a month ago.
Yeah.
So those series are going to be so important. You know, they're 3-3 against the Red Sox, and they're 1-2 against the Blue Jays. They're just now playing the Rays for the first time. And that's basically what their schedule looks like. They haven't played the Blue Jays yet in the division either. So those are going to be big. I think they're better than last year. Mm-hmm. I still do have questions, though. I definitely have questions about the team still.
But just going to pull the curtain back a little bit. We are recording this on Sunday night is when we're recording this. And I knew you and I were going to be recording. And when they had the lead in the they won the first game against Freed against Atlanta, and they had the lead, I think, with two outs in the eighth inning on Saturday evening. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, if the Orioles sweep the Braves and I got Connor Newcomb, I've got it. We've got a scoop. We may go viral with this one. And then suddenly Pilar homered. Isn't it amazing how fast the series could turn around like that? Like it went from they've won the series, they're going to go for the sweep on Sunday, and it's that weird sort of game that they start at here in Los Angeles, and they start at like 8 in the morning. I think that may mess with the Braves psyche. Imagine going to Atlanta and giving them a sweep. Oh, no.
Nope. Yeah. Nope. It was Kevin Pillar, and I actually think
did I say something else?
Or? No, I'm just saying it was Kevin Pillar. You did, because he has hit, I believe, now 330 against the Orioles in his career during his time with the Blue Jays and with the Red Sox. He's just killed the O's. And so I actually think Orioles fans took that loss kind of well on Saturday night. It was the combination of, wow, the Braves are really good, and we were, you know, a couple outs away from beating them again. And sometimes Kevin Pillar just kills us, and Orioles fans have just realized that fact at this point. But they could have won that series pretty. I mean, they go to 12 innings on Sunday. I mean, they didn't score in the top of the 11th or the top of the 12th with the zombie runner on base. They killed off those chances. You know, when you get a zero in extra innings in the new rules, you kind of feel like you got to win in that inning, right? Like,
yeah.
Every time you get a zero, you got to feel like this is our time.
Oh yeah,
to win it. And they got they scored in the 10th, couldn't get the zero in the bottom half, but then, you know, you get the zero in the bottom of the 11th and you're fired up, but you're like, that should have won us the game, except for the fact that, well, we didn't score in the top of the 11th. So here we go onto the 12th and they lose. But they were in those games, and win or lose, you know, game 33 and 34 of 162, I feel like they can still get better. So it's tough. I really just need to see like a larger sample size of games against teams like the Braves. That's really what it comes down to at this point. I know what they're going to do against bad teams. They're going to give up some runs, but they're going to beat them. Now what can they do against a team that, I mean, no one will be surprised if Braves won the World Series this year. Like, what can they do against these kind of teams?
We're here with Connor Newcomb, the host of Locked On Orioles. I want to, first of all, for whatever reason, I'm comparing these Orioles to lots of Royals teams. And I hope it's not bringing up nightmares of the 2014 American League Championship Series.
It is, but we can continue.
All right, we'll move on. Another common factor, though, is that the Orioles seem to be taking advantage of the new stolen base renaissance that we have right here. I mean, you've already got Mateo's in double digits of stolen bases. Mullins in double digits of stolen bases. They're using and it's not just the stolen bases. They're using the running game, and they're using going first to third and putting a lot of pressure on the defense. I've seen that happen in a bunch of the games there where you know, it's okay. They're not quite the Whitey Herzog Cardinals or Royals for that matter, but they are showing that they are taking advantage of that because they don't have big slugger numbers. They don't have the big thumpers in their lineup, and yet they're scoring a lot, and the offense is very productive. And so when I see, you know, Mullins doing what he's doing, I'm seeing Mateo's doing, and I think Mateo's off to a very good start. I mean, you're starting to see that when they do get a big bomb from Mountcastle or Santander, then, you know, they're not waiting for them. You know, that they're actually, God forbid, manufacturing runs and not just sitting back and waiting for the bomb.
Yeah, and it's not a lot of solo homers because they've got those runners on base. They're creating the running game. When those guys do go deep, which they're not doing as much as they had last year, a three-run homer helps you a lot more than a solo shot. And, you know, Santander hit a grand slam on Friday night in the win, and they've been really good with the bases loaded, really good with runners in scoring position this year. They've been top five with runners in scoring position. So even if it's not a hit, they're converting with a sac fly, or even sometimes an RBI ground out will get the job done, you know, with the infield back. So they've been able to do that, kind of avoid the strikeouts. That was their issue Sunday. They didn't do anything with runners in scoring position, but besides that, it's been good. And Sully, they did have a little bit of a leg up because last year Mullins and Mateo were 1-2 in American League stolen bases. Yeah. So I think it was something easy going into the season saying the Orioles already led everybody in this category last year with these two guys. They stole 35 and 34 bases. So everybody was already thinking, could both these guys get to 50 with these new rules? And so I don't think that part has been as much of a surprise, but the fact that like Adam Frazier is running as much as he is and Ramon Arias, I can't remember the last time he stole a base. He stole two of them the other day against Kansas City in the same game. So at some point, you know, these other guys are realizing, hey, they're so worried about our hitters. They're so worried about Mateo and Mullins getting on base. Maybe we can swipe a base. Maybe we've got a little bit of speed and enough to do something on the base paths. And so it's been really fun to watch. And it is nice because the Buck Showalter Orioles teams relied on the home run ball really more than anybody. They had a bunch of dudes who some could play defense and some really could not, but they were all large and had a lot of power. They played in what back then was very much a hitter's ballpark. And between Chris Davis and Adam Jones and Manny Machado and Mark Trumbo and Matt Wieters, all these guys, just it was home run or bust. And it got them to the postseason three times, but they didn't really advance deep. This is a good offense. Those were good offenses. This is a good offense in a very different way, as you said. And it's guys who hit singles and doubles and steal bases and, you know, get the job done with runners in scoring position. I think they're one of the top teams in like sacrifice flies this year, which is an odd stat, but kind of a good stat to be leading baseball in. And so you combine all those things and you take a look at the fact that they can score with the best of the teams. Can they pitch with the best of the teams? At this point. But they can score in a lot of different ways. And you mentioned Jorge Mateo. He's not just running. You know, he's hitting over 300 this year, and he's cut his strikeout rate like insanely down from what it's been in his career. And when a guy with that much speed who hits the ball hard just puts it in play, he becomes a really valuable player. And, you know, he's hitting sixth and seventh sometimes in this order. So they've been impressive, and some of their best guys haven't even really gotten going yet.
I'm going to bring up a couple of points of what I think they need to improve on, but I'm going to stay positive for a second. Last year, the Orioles were killed by people for, despite the fact that they were within striking distance of a wild card spot, they wound up selling at the trade deadline instead of adding two. Well, the trade of Jorge Lopez to Minnesota, no one's complaining about that anymore because Yennier Cano, as of this recording, I don't think he's let up a run yet in this season. And when you, I think the weakness of this team so far has been the starting rotation, but I do think that a big strength has been their bullpen and having, you know, Bautista's obviously having a fine season, but having a new weapon like Cano be someone who is super reliable, I think that goes a long way, especially when you see some of their starters are not putting up the numbers you were hoping they would.
Yeah, and even Bautista has had a little bit of a mechanical issue where he's walking a few more guys, and it doesn't matter because Yennier Cano has allowed two hits, no walks, and I believe 19 strikeouts through 14 scoreless innings. He didn't even make the opening day roster, Sully. They had to send a pitcher down a couple weeks up to get him up here. The funny thing about Cano was he was kind of considered the throw-in in that Jorge Lopez deal. They got Cade Povich, a lefty who's in Double-A and is one of the Orioles' top pitching prospects. They got two, like, you know, young 19-year-old pitchers who were pitching in the complex league, who they're kind of excited about. And then Cano had already pitched in the big leagues a little bit with the Twins. He was 28. He was walking everybody. And the Orioles said, hey, he's got a pretty good changeup. Why don't you throw them in? And the Twins said, well, he's sitting in Triple-A and we're trying to make the playoffs, so go ahead and take him. The Orioles fixed him and told him how to throw strikes, and he's not walking anybody. And it's funny, I said on my show last week after he had another just incredible outing, basically through two scoreless innings against the Royals. And I just said, look, like when Cano comes in the game, like I just know it's going to be a zero at this point. And I joked that I'd trust him to do life saving surgery on me right now. I'd trust him to do a lot of different things. I was out and about for a bit during the eighth and ninth innings of Sunday's game against the Braves. And I went on my phone and saw that Cano was coming into the game in the bottom of the eighth in a 1-1 game. And I said to myself, you know what? At the very worst, this game is going to go to extra innings. And sure enough, he goes six up, six down. And although the Orioles offense couldn't do anything, he gets the game to extra innings. It's kind of a relief for Orioles fans to watch him right now. And with Bautista struggling a little bit, they could even put him in the ninth if they wanted to at any point. He's been that good. And so that's at least been one where Mike Elias can say, hey, pretty quickly as well in a turnaround. This is why I really did that deal.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes the player who comes through in a deal is not necessarily who you thought it was going to be. Dean Kramer was not the big name in the Manny Machado trade. And so far he has been.
He's the only one left.
He's the only one left. Yeah. You know, now he's obviously not having, he had a good start a couple starts ago. And maybe he's turning it around. I take a look at the rotation, and if there's an Achilles heel to this team right now, it is the starting staff. Especially when you see some of the high ERAs and low inning pitch numbers playing against the A's and the Tigers and all them of the world, you would think that they would have a more robust rotation. You know, that would be able to feast on some of those lineups. What do you think is going on there, and should they be in the market to try to get if the White Sox fall? I mean, you'd be the Dylan Ceases of the world would be available, although the White Sox bats came alive in Cincinnati over the weekend. What do you think the main priority is for the team, especially if they're going to try to make a run at it?
Yeah, it's got to be starting pitching. And it was better in Atlanta. You know, you mentioned Dean Kramer. He gave up a run over six innings, which was really was good for him. Yeah. Kyle Bradish struggled, but it was two runs over five innings, and he got through it. Tyler Wells, one run over five innings Sunday. But you hear the common theme, even when there are limiting runs, six innings, five innings, five innings. That is a lot to put on your bullpen every single night. Even if you have a top five bullpen like the Orioles have right now,
you'll wear them down. You'll wear them the hell down if you don't get someone who's an innings eater.
Sully, it's exactly what happened last year. The Orioles had, I think, better starting pitching last year than they have right now. But that bullpen, if you remember, that was really the reason the Orioles finished above 500 last year.
And in which is why the Jorge Mateo trade caught everyone off guard. Yep. It was like, this is you're trading away from your strength.
Yeah, this is your closer. And now that bullpen wore down in September, and when the Orioles found themselves two games out on September 5th, and they realized, oh wait, this is for real. That's when the bullpen started wearing down from overuse last year, and that became an issue. I'm worried it's going to happen again. I think the other big issue is Kyle Gibson. They signed to be an innings eater. He's been okay. He's had some good starts. He's had some bad starts. I don't think they expect him to be an ace, really. He's 35-year-old Kyle Gibson. I think the big issue, Sully, has been Cole Irvin, who they traded for from the A's. This is a guy who's pitched just shy of 200 innings each of the last 2 years for Oakland. They didn't trade for him to strike out 10 guys to start. They traded for him to pitch seven innings every time he goes out there, whether he gives up five runs or one run. Cole Irvin was horrendous after three starts, and they optioned him to AAA, and he is still down there. That is, I think, the number one issue. They specifically targeted him, sent a prospect to Oakland. It takes a lot. It's a send down. It takes a lot for Mike Elias to trade away a prospect. He did that to get Cole Irvin, just to say, you know what? Wow. We have somebody who's going to throw 190 innings. And he was so bad. And you look at this rotation, it's not like there's five amazing guys who stole the spot from Irvin. It was that he was so bad that I was surprised he had a minor league option left, but he did have one left, and they sent him down to AAA. So I think that is the number one issue, is that you don't have a guy right now who, even if he's not the sexiest pitcher in the world, and even if he's not going to strike out 11 and give up one run, you don't have a guy who every fifth day you say, bullpen, you can take a deep breath today. You know, no matter what happens, he's going to pitch deep into the game. That's what they wanted with Irvin. And if he's doing it for the Norfolk Tides, that doesn't really help the Orioles.
No, it doesn't. Well, you help listeners by putting on your show every day at Locked On Orioles. Connor, this is your first appearance on the show this season, so hopefully maybe we'll have you back, maybe when the Orioles are playing great down the stretch. I know some of you are hearing this on Locked On Orioles, some of you are hearing this on Locked On MLB. Tell people where they can follow your show.
Yeah, you can get the show anywhere you get your podcast, 5 days a week, covering the Orioles, episodes out every morning, and on YouTube. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the Locked On Orioles YouTube channel.
And you can follow us at Locked On MLB Pods on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Hoping the birds will fly high, because that'll make Connor Newcomb's job a lot easier at Locked On Orioles. This has been a Locked On Orioles, Locked On MLB crossover. Where are you? You're over at Keys, Connor Newcomb. My name is Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.